Hi guys, I'm Danat Hanveli and this is Something to Consider. There's a question we don't ever really ask. Why do people become parents in the first place? In a world where instability, fear, and constant change define so much of our daily lives, raising a child can feel like both an act of courage and deep uncertainty. Today's guest has spent over 13 years in the quiet, powerful work of helping parents heal their relationships, not just with their children, but with themselves. She's a licensed child psychologist and parental guidance specialist who has worked with over 6,000 families. Her belief is clear and profound. Parenting is not instinctive, it's a skill. And like any skill, it requires intention, practice, and unlearning. Together, we'll explore the emotional and psychological realities of modern parenthood, raising a child as an entrepreneur, the unseen pressures parents carry, the overlooked role of fathers, and what it means to raise a child in a world that doesn't always feel safe. So whether you're a parent, a future parent, or simply someone reflecting on your own upbringing, this episode's an invitation to think differently about what it truly means to raise a child. Riham Munzir, welcome to the show and thank you for being here.
Thank you, Dana, for having me. It's such a pleasure and I love your intro. I have a lot to say about it.
Really? Please share. Let's start there.
A 1 hour comment on each sentence because it's really, it's beautiful. What you said is beautiful.
Oh, well, I mean, it's a testament to the work that you do, right?
Yes. And, you know, getting into this world of parenting is... It's very enlightening. It helps us reflect on who we are, on how we were raised, on how we are raising our children. Like, this reflection is truly mind-blowing if we get into it and we dive into how our traumas, our childhoods, our parents' childhoods, how they are controlling us and how we are acting upon these traumas. It's truly like mind-blowing.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting how you framed it. Parenting is in and of itself a reflection of yourself. And I think that's the right place to start. Riham, if I wanted to ask you, in the context of this conversation, in this safe space, what would you like to share about you and your background that will set the stage for the conversation we're about to have?
When I started working first, after I graduated, I started working with children because I'm a child psychologist. So the parents came with a demand to see their children because they had certain problems. I used to see the children, do therapy sessions with them. But in 2018, I got married and I traveled to Spain to live with my husband in Spain. And at that time, it was very hard for me to go work there because of the language barrier and stuff. So I shifted my work to working online. So I started working online, but there wasn't anything called online. You know, people didn't know what Zoom is back at the time. So I worked with parents. I didn't work with children because at that time there were no techniques to work online with children. So what I did is I started helping moms, learning the tools and the tricks and the strategies to solve their children's problems. So I taught parents how to be their children's therapist. And I believe that this, it was mind-blowing to me before the parents because it really made me realize how important it is for us as parents to know what our children are feeling or thinking, what their desires are, what is the cause, the drive behind their behavior. Because to us, we were raised on the idea that children, when they misbehave, they should be punished, they should be spanked, they should be bitwabbakho, you know. So I used to judge children because their behavior is just a behavior by itself. There are no like reasons behind it. So I just punish and I hit for the child to stop the behavior. And then I realized that, no, there are so many emotions behind every single behavior. There are so many thoughts behind these behaviors. And once we identify these thoughts and behaviors, we're going to look at the behavior from a completely different perspective. Mm. You know, I teach parents something called MCA, most compassionate analysis to a behavior, because from our perspective, when we look at the behavior, what happens is from a low compassionate analysis, we look at it like he's misbehaving, so he needs to be hit. From a most compassionate analysis, what emotion is he having? So just like when we have people over, when we invite people over and they're late, the first idea that crosses my mind, my ulule, no, they're going to be late, the food's going to be cold, they need to respect that we're inviting them. But once we know that, for example, her child got sick, I have a child, I understand, okay, oh my God, this
you're empathetic.
This empathy, this compassion, it changes everything. And the same goes with children. Mafi, any behavior on this planet Earth that does not have a reason. And if I don't identify the reason, that might be conscious or unconscious. And this is the trick, to know me as a parent who is not in the psychology field, know what is the unconscious reason that is driving my child to behave as such. And once we know that, everything that I live and I experience as a child, as a parent, is directly reflected on the child, we know then how important it is for us to heal before even having children. And even after having children, it's never too late to heal.
Mm.
No, because we are like, transgenerational toxic traumas.
Something that they inherit.
Yeah.
You know, it's really interesting. I love that you're talking about parenting from a space of empathy and compassion. But I think there's something key that I want to circle back to. When we look at parenting, usually there's an ego that drives how people see parenting.
Mm-hmm.
And it's closely rooted to this assumption that a child's behavior is a direct reflection on my capability as a parent. And I feel like in a weird way, this is something that drives a lot of that toxic assumptions around mm-hmm. parenting. So can you speak to that a little bit? Because what I like about what you're saying is that so much of the relationship that you invest in teaching your own clients is the relationship they have with themselves before the relationship that they start to have with a child.
You know, Dana, we were raised on the basis that my accomplishments are what define me. My grade in school is what defines me. My good behavior when we go visit some people or when we visit grandma or grandpa is what defines me. And when we get raised over the years and over time with this mentality, what we think is that my high income is what defines me. My status, my position at work is what defines me. My children define me. My children's behavior define me. Everything around me defines me except me.
Mm.
I don't define me. My accomplishments and my children are my accomplishments. I created them. No, actually, I have a problem with that. I did not create them. God created them. I'm just a vessel, you know. But to many people, we think that we created these humans. So these humans are a direct reflection of who I am.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, they are a direct reflection of what I did throughout these years of parenting. It's not a reflection of who I am. Because my knowledge in parenting does not define me. Because we are not raised to know how to raise a child. You know, our parents, especially with us as women, as girls, when we were girls, they taught us how to be sittete biyut.
Yeah.
You know, how to have people over, كيف نعمل عزيمة, نمت صفرة, to prepare food, to take care of our husbands. But they did not teach us how to raise a child. What do we do with postpartum depression? How long should I breastfeed? If my child did not accept my breast milk, what do I do? When do I give a bottle? When my child misbehaves, what do? I get back to what has been done to me. I was shouted at. I was disrespected. I was judged. I was blamed. I was labeled. So I do the same. So this is why when moms judge themselves and criticize themselves and blame themselves, did you know what you should do? What's the right thing to do? And you didn't do it. You didn't know because you didn't learn. You weren't taught how to do that.
Mm.
You know, you were taught, you did with your children what has been done with you. And this is not the right thing to do. This is why I tell parents that they need to educate yourselves. Every single mom needs to be a parenting specialist. Mm-hmm. Every single mom needs to be a nutritionist, so she teaches her children about food. Now, there are some specialties in universities that I believe should not be there. No, every person should be a parent specialist. Every parent should be a nutritionist. Every parent should be a speech therapist to know exactly how to help their children overcome any difficulty that they face.
And I guess that would be the essence of the first step in really breaking a cycle, educating yourself in order to understand how not to repeat specific patterns you've seen or experienced.
Yes. And I want to say something. This is not overwhelming to parents, by the way. I don't want parents to look at it as if like it's too much work. It is not too much work. Once we read a couple of books, we consult with specialists, we do our research, we read some articles. It's not something that needs an extreme amount of effort from us. Once we have our minds on something that I want to learn about this, it's not too hard to do. I just need to have the, you know, the approach or the mentality that this is something that I need to have. This is not something I need to learn.
I like the idea of this is something that I need to learn, and it lends itself to your belief of it's not some parenting is not a concept that is meant to purely be instinctual. It's a skill that you can acquire and work on. I always found it very isolating, especially in my case. I don't have children, but there's this sense of judgment that women or people, even men, that don't necessarily have children struggle or will never understand what it is like to build a relationship with a child. And that's why I find it very encouraging to know that it's not this instinctual thing that's in your blood that you just know how to do and you're perfect at just because you had a child. There are people that have adopted children. And as you were saying, they learn to become parents based on the skills that they acquire throughout the process.
You know, Dana, some women that don't have children, they have a maternal instinct much more than many women who do have children.
Really?
Yeah. I don't believe that having a child, when having a child, are not just, the maternal instinct, it's not something that is born with us. I don't believe it is born with us because I'm seeing like with so many moms, I don't see this maternal instinct. You know, I don't see even so many moms because they experienced a lot of traumas in their lives. They are too taken by these traumas, unresolved, unhealed traumas, that they are not being able to connect emotionally with their children. No judgment whatsoever. Because she's a victim. She lived traumas that she shouldn't have lived, you know, she shouldn't have experienced. So because there's one girl, she's 12, she was 12 at that time. She sent me a message telling me, Tantriham, please, I want you to do a session with my mom to teach her how to love me.
Habibti.
How to love me. My mom doesn't love me, doesn't know how to deal with me. Sometimes she fake it, and I know when she does. This is a heartbreaking message. When I did do a session with the mom is a victim of how she was raised. You know, to us in our society, we judge her because how can a mom not love her child?
Yeah.
She clearly told me, I'm not being able to love her. I'm not being able to connect with her. But when I asked her about her childhood, it made a lot of sense. I understand. This is why I believe the instinctual, the mother instinct is not there for everybody. It's not generalized, no.
I think, I mean, so much of what you said is so important. Thank you for saying it, Riham. A lot of the time, especially in our culture, a culture that glamorizes marriage as kind of a mandate for everyone, which I don't want to say I have nothing against marriage. I love it. I love relationships. I love partnerships. I love family. And I love that it's very much part of our culture. But I find that the encouragement of going into a relationship for marriage and then bringing a child into the world can become almost a compensation for the type of life that a lot of these parents didn't feel like they were able to experience. And I feel like until we get to a stage where we are comfortable addressing that as fact and as a reality, we each come in with our own context and our own background. I don't think real healing can really occur.
One of the things that you mentioned in the intro is that we need to ask ourselves, why do some adults become parents, no? And this is one of the questions that I even teach my students in the university. I tell them that you need to reflect on why do you want to become a parent? Why do you want to have a child? You know, when some people ask a mom, why didn't you have a child yet? My question is why she should have a child? Because look, like life's continuity, a continuity to the family's name, who will be inheriting my business, who's going to take care of me when I get old, the legacy, you know? So this is one side. And other people, they get kids because they want to fix something from their childhood. They want to compensate for themselves for something they did not have. For example, they want to love and be loved unconditionally. So they get a child just to fulfill this gap. And actually all what I mentioned now, they are all the wrong reasons to have a child. And we truly, if we want to reflect on why do we have kids, all of the reasons are selfish reasons. I can't see any unselfish reason to get a child. To me, having a child should have, like, let's say, I'm going to say this one reason. Maybe the listeners can brainstorm with us and, like, give us other reasons. I want to have a child to raise an emotionally healthy, insane salih for the community.
A good member of the the community that can actually contribute.
I don't want anything from them. I don't want them to spend money on me when I grow up. I don't want them to take care of me. I don't want them to leave their families to stay beside me. I don't want anything of that. I don't want anything in return. And this, I believe, is one of the most common problems that we are facing now. You know, the elderly people now who are in their 70s, 80s, women didn't work at that time. So their life was purely دفنوا حياتهم for their children, you know? So everything they did for them in their life was take care of their kids.
It was about sacrifice.
Yes, they literally sacrificed their lives for us. And what's happening now, we are so busy with our lives. We are traveling all over the world. We are not, many of us are completely relocating. We are not being with our grandparents and parents in the same country. So they are being left alone. And here we can see the struggle because, okay, so what my life is like, what was the purpose of my life?
Yeah.
What did I do with my life? خلص لك الواحد يروح على بلد ويتركني لحالي, you know, I'm being left alone. So this very high expectation of the elderly people nowadays is because they had this expectation, I'm raising them for them to take care of me, for them to spend money on me when I grow up, when I don't have money anymore. But if this is the reason, well, the money that you're going to spend on your kids for the 25 years, the first 25 years before they start working, if you invest it, when you grow old, you won't need them to spend money on you.
Yeah.
You know, it's you're investing now, you're losing your money now for them to spend. What if they didn't find a good work? You're a burden on them. So if this is the reason, this is the wrong reason, of course.
It's interesting that you talk about it in this way where I want to go back to your point about compensating for something that they didn't have. What are the dangers of falling into that trap? And I'm not just talking about women. I also want to talk about men as well, because I also think that men do have an attachment to this idea of legacy as well when it comes to children, that sometimes it doesn't matter what the woman thinks about it. A lot of the time he's getting married because he wants his own legacy. He wants his children. Whether a woman wants to or not shouldn't be part of the conversation. What are the dangers of going into that cycle and having a child purely for the purpose to receive and give the unconditional love that you didn't necessarily have?
Yeah. You know, I meet lots of businessmen. And I notice when talking about these topics with them that those who don't have boys عندهم حسرة بقلبهم because they don't have boys, they have only girls, because my legacy is like, it's gonna vanish. Who said your legacy is gonna vanish? And why are you building all of this just to have a legacy? Why do you have this need that for your name to glow after you pass? your duty in your life is the time that you are here on this planet Earth to do something good for this planet Earth, to do something good for your community. You give, you take back. This is it. After you're living in misery and in pain just because you don't, no one's going to hold your name. Who said no one's going to hold your name after you pass? Mm. Who said your girl wouldn't hold your name?
Or even what is this idea of legacy? And just as you talking, it made me question. We always associate legacy to something that is concrete and associated to a person or a name. But legacy is anything that you create. It could be the legacy of the business you leave behind or the impact that you leave on a community.
Yes.
What a beautiful perspective shift. I actually didn't think about it like that. That's a beautiful
even
way
if you
of
don't have
it.
Kids at all.
Yeah.
At all. Not even you have girls, you know, like your legacy is going to stay there after you pass. If you build the good legacy, you know, in life, this is your investment. You're investing in your business, not in your kids, you know, if you want to take to keep your legacy.
Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of people who are, and it's not just a people thing. It's the age that we're living in. We're in an age where everyone wants to do everything and everyone wants everything now and at the same time. Whether it's entrepreneurs or people that are trying to build their own career. And the excuse is, I want to maintain the growth of this family and give this family, provide for this family in every way possible. And what tends to happen is the exchange almost becomes a loss, because the less time they spend at home, the more successful they are outside of the home. Can you speak a little bit about the struggles of families that are not able to maintain that balance?
Yeah. So you said they want to provide for their family. Mm. Let's define provide. Mm. What do they want to provide?
In the case of this example, financial stability.
Only. Mm. Is this the correct providing that we need to give for our kids and provide them with? Money? Mm. Okay, they're closed. They're okay. They'll become small and then they're going to throw them. They're going to donate them and then the toy is going to be broken. Mm-hmm. You're going to get another one. And then what you need to provide for your family is love, attention, connection. That's what your family need. They don't need your money. Mm. They need you. And you know, when parents give money instead of their time, you are valuing yourself بهالقد amount of money. You're saying that your absence is valued بهالقد هالورقة هالكم ورقة, these couple of papers. You know? So نحنا, we are reducing the value of ourselves when we say that I'm replacing my absence with these two papers. I'm devaluing myself.
Or a tuition at an insanely expensive school that only the top 1% can get into.
Yeah.
Wow. I never thought about it like that. Can you delve a little bit deeper about connection? Because I feel like whether it's love, attention, or connection, one, I feel like there's an overlap in all three. But two, how do you really define that? Because what parent is going to tell you they don't love their kids? In their mind, this is how they love. They love by providing. They love by, to quote my father, putting a roof over our head, Habibi. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like there are very specific ways that one sees their contribution to parenting. So how would you define that further? Love, connection, and attention.
As many old parents, most of the parents, they love their children, okay? I'm saying most because I told you what I'm experiencing and seeing in my clinic. It's not that they hate them, but they are not being able to connect. This is very important. It's not hate. It's the inability to love because they are having some traumas. So just to add this to what I said before. We love our kids, okay? My question is not if we do or don't. My question is, do they feel this love or not? Mm. Because most of the time, we love our kids in our way, not in their way. In each session I do, I make sure to ask parents, what is your child's love language? And I'm going to tell you, 7 out of 10 parents, they don't know how to answer this question. What do you mean by love language? How does he feel loved? Does he feel loved when you kiss him, when you hug him, when you say good words to him, when you tell him that you love him, when you spend quality time with him, when you do an act of service to him, when you buy something for him? So there's a book called The Five Love Languages. They have a series for couples, for adults, for teenagers, and for children. I always make sure to tell each parent to read this book so you can identify what is exactly your child's love language. You know, because if my love language is quality time and I'm spending quality time with my children, it doesn't mean that they feel my love. Mm. I'm feeling the love because it is my love language. So we can't love everybody our way. If my husband's love language is quality time, but mine is acts of service, I spend quality time with him so he can feel my love, and he should do acts of services for me so I can feel his love, you know? It goes that way. So if I don't make sure that my love is reaching my child, he is truly feeling it, I'm spending energy in the wrong place. I'm pouring in the wrong cup.
That's a very good point. But Reham, the challenge is, especially with a child that is still growing and developing, a lot of the time they don't understand their own emotions. And so much of the frustration of being a parent stems from dealing with a little human that you feel you are failing because you don't understand what you need to do to help them. And they don't understand how to express what they need. And yet you're supposed to love them in a way where they feel seen and heard. So it's a bit of a, it feels messy. Like,
that's where a combination of instinct and knowledge comes.
Okay.
So I need to know this inability to express his emotions. Where is it coming from? What age is he at? Is it a normal developmental milestone? Is he at the age of 2, for example? It's very normal. Or he's 8 years old when it's no, he can't tantrum anymore. It's not for his age. He's more mature now. So I need to see, if you want to put it that way, developmentally, where on which milestone he is, so we can know what's the right approach to handle this tantrum and to know what skill is he lacking. Do I need to work on his emotional intelligence? I need to work on his ability to control himself. Is he having an impulse control, an ability to impulsive reactions? What is it exactly, the skill that he needs to learn? And I need to handle this. And my instinct kicks in here because I need to know. So many times, parents ask me a question about their kids. I tell them, your option, we have 3 options or 5 options. It's either this, 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 or that. Okay. Your instinct as a mom, what does it tell you? Which one of these scenarios? I'm giving you the knowledge, you give me the instinct so we can work together and find the solution.
Your instinct, though, based on the child that is living with you. Yes. So there has to be an element of, to your point that you were talking about earlier, empathy, connection, you're listening, you're spending time, you're in tune.
Yes.
It can't be you're an absent parent and you have an instinct.
Yes.
Right?
Of course.
Interesting. But what are some common parenting mistakes that have a tendency to leave long-term psychological effects on a child?
I like the big word of disrespect.
Oh, wow. I wasn't expecting you to say that.
Yeah. Why am I saying disrespect? Because under this word, there are so many other mistakes. When I don't talk to him, I'm disrespecting him. I'm disregarding his presence, so I'm disrespecting him. When I don't look into his eyes, I'm disrespecting him. When I don't take his emotions into consideration, I'm disrespecting him. No? So there are so many things, a list of things under the big word of disrespect. So disrespecting a child, his needs, his behavior, his emotions, his desires, his body, his developmental milestones. No? When, let's say, a child should walk by the age of 10 months, and a year and like 3 months, for example. When I insist on her walking on the age of 1, the day she becomes 1, I'm disrespecting her developmental milestone. I need to respect her body. When her body is ready, she will start walking. When I remove the diaper at 1, by the time that his pelvic floor muscles are not ready for this, and disrespecting his body.
Wow.
So under the big title umbrella of disrespect, there are a very big list. When I blame, judge, criticize, moralize, disregard emotions, this is all disrespect.
It's interesting because, especially from a cultural perspective, whether we're talking about Arab communities or actually a lot of communities on this side of the world in general, this idea of mandating respect is usually the other way around. It's pushed and imposed on the child that from the earliest age, you must respect your elders or respect mama and baba from day one, but not vice versa. And without any understanding as to why. Like now, as you're speaking, I'm just thinking about something as simple as respecting whether a child wants to be kissed or hugged. You know, families usually, they want to, uncles or aunts, they want to rush and hug and kiss them. But children also sometimes pull away and they're not always comfortable with that. But we're always like, go, kiss. Yeah.
And this is why you notice nowadays that us in our generation, when we get disrespect, either we're extremely fine with that because we're used to this, we don't say anything, we don't, ما منحس الحقنا زبديك, because you know, that's the norm to us, or we do an extreme reaction to this disrespect because I was disrespected my entire life, I don't tolerate this, this is my trauma in life. Disrespect is a trauma ever since I was born. So I don't tolerate this and I do a big issue out of it.
So how does an adult that has dealt with this sort of trauma, that is dealing with this sort of trauma, especially already being an adult and already being a parent, how do they navigate something like that?
First, consciousness about that. When I'm conscious about my traumas and what triggers I have and why do I have these triggers, because sometimes, Dana, these triggers are conscious. I know that disrespect triggers me. Sometimes I'm not aware of that. Because we weren't taught how to know what's happening in our minds, you know? Like, shut up, go sit in your room. I don't want to hear you. I don't want to listen. So we used to repress our emotions. We used to repress our thoughts because we thought that our thoughts are not correct, you know? No, I don't have the right to have this thought. This is not correct. What I'm thinking is not right. So I used to think that afkari ghalat. Afkari ghalat meaning that I'm wrong. أنا غلط. أنا كأ human being, أنا غلط. فهذا الشيء بيخلينا أنه أوقات in our lives not to know and not to identify what our traumas are because, really, is that it? So I wasn't taught how to think things through.
You know, this word trauma has come up a lot in this conversation and it's also come up a lot in the world. We see it on social media. We talk about people overclaiming it, but we cannot deny that the world today is very different from the world that we were raised in, from the world that our parents were raised in, and so on and so forth. I don't want to say harder, easier, because I think it's relative to the experiences and those who experienced it. But for example, we're witnessing a live genocide. We are seeing displacement happen, not just in places like Palestine, but we are seeing displacement happen all over the Levant, all over Africa, people being annihilated in countries all over the world. And it's a very scary time. And I know we talked about this idea of why would one want to have a kid to begin with, but to carry around the load of raising a child in such uncertain times is a whole other traumatic ordeal. And I'm curious, do you have any thoughts around this? Because as a child who grew up with parents that also survived wars in their respective countries, where I had to grow up in a country that wasn't necessarily my ethnic background, you know, there are some things that today I'm realizing I carry with me that are not even my own. I'm curious, what are your thoughts on this?
Have you heard of quantum psychology before?
I've heard of it, but I don't know anything about it.
Okay. So in quantum psychology, they say that all of the traumas that are lived by your ancestors are inherited by you. your inherent, your grandma, your great-great-granddad's trauma.
Wow.
And this is crazy. This is, can you imagine that a war that happened three generations back, I'm experiencing it in my unconscious mind? It's mind-blowing, but it's so true. So I'm living my own traumas, my own childhood traumas that I want to recover from, and I'm carrying my ancestors' traumas. It's a lot for us to carry. This is why healing is very, very important. And I don't believe that healing is a one thing, one therapy, type of therapy to do. We have the traditional psychology, we have the quantum psychology, we have the spiritual psychology, we have the meditation, transcendental meditation, for example. Each type of healing, they work together for us to really overcome all of what we've been experiencing in our unconscious mind.
My God, that sounds so expensive, Riham. Wallah, that sounds we need a therapy for every single part of our, yeah. Like it's crazy.
You know, it's not necessary for everybody to do all types of therapy, but it's important for you to identify what is your need at that moment. For now, I need to tackle my own childhood. Mm. Once I'm okay with that, I overcame all of the traumas that I experienced, I can move on to other generations.
Do you think it's important for a parent to go through? Because I don't think you're ever healed. I don't believe in this notion of you're done.
No,
never. I think it's a lifelong journey.
Yeah, of course.
But should one have started the healing process before becoming a parent? I know everyone doesn't have that luxury.
Of course. Of course.
Okay.
Because, you know, becoming a parent is not just a normal life event. It's a profound identity shift. And with this shift, a lot of wounds come to the surface. A lot of unhealed traumas come to the surface. A lot of inner conflicts come to the surface. So it's not just a normal, regular, yeah, everybody gets kids. You know, I hate this. حتى البسينات بخلفه. As if it's that easy. It's not that easy. So with all of the changes that happens in our hormones, in our brains, with everything that's coming to the surface when we become a parent, whether a father or a mother, it's very shocking to our nervous system. So if we don't handle this before we have a child, the child unfortunately might get psychologically affected by that. Before I got engaged to my husband, now husband, I did almost 7 years of traditional psychoanalysis, a type of psychotherapy, and before I even met him. And then when I met him, I did another, in English, in French we call it tranche thérapeutique, yani another phase of therapy, just to make sure that he's the right person for me. I don't have any unconscious daddy issues that I still didn't resolve. I wanted to see if he reminds me of my father in some unconscious way. So because I want to marry him for him as a human being, not because I have any unconscious desire or need that is repressed in my unconscious mind.
Interesting.
And I believe that even when we want to have kids, we should go through the same process.
Interesting.
We do this therapy before we get married. We do this therapy before we have the first child. We do this therapy again before we have the second child. It's not overwhelming. I want to make it clear for people who are listening to us. I don't want them to feel, you know, every time. It's just a call away. Just like I go to check up with my doctor every now and then. It's the same. It's not something like, I don't know why it's seen as a big deal. I want to call my therapist. It's not a big deal. It's a phone away. No, my therapy is a phone away.
I think what I love about what you said is it's not rooted in an external person solving your problem. It's rooted in seeking an objective opinion to help you understand yourself and patterns and underlying issues that maybe you are not completely conscious of yet.
You know, Dana, the therapist does not have the answers. Mm. No, the therapist guides you
to find the answer.
To find your own answers. Mm. This is our role. I don't have an answer to every single trauma every single human being experienced.
Yeah.
But I have the tools on how to guide you step by step so you can find the answer that you already have.
I love the fact that you referenced fathers, because I think it's something that we dismiss. And the assumption is that the role of parenting is the role of the mother because of that maternal instinct or whatever you want to call it. Because she was that vessel. She innately has this connection that a father will never have, which I don't think is true. What do you think a healthy role or perspective on the role of a father should be in parenting?
First, the father is not an ATM machine. You know, we say that the father is, or the husband is, the provider and protector. No, these are not just his roles. Nowadays, he's not even fully the provider. Women are working equally as the fathers, and they are providing as well. So the role of the father is to be emotionally connected with his kids, to be there, to listen to his children, to know who are his children's friends, to know who are the parents of this friend. What mentality do they have? What approach of parenting do they use with their children? The other family, huh? Does this align with my parenting approach? Do we have the same values? What are the life values that I want to teach my child? How am I teaching him these values? How am I telling him what are our العادات والتقاليد والقيم الأساسية in life? What عادات وتقاليد I want to keep and give my child, and what عادات وتقاليد I want to let go of. I don't want my child to experience this because I believe these عادات وتقاليد are not important. Just like عيب نتضيف.
طبعا, what is the result of not having that from the cases that you've seen? Because if I'm being very honest, everything that you just said is beautiful. But in traditional families, if the father is the main provider of the household, the assumption is he just doesn't have the time. And this is something that is the mother's role. So what is kind of the consequence of not having an active paternal figure in the child's life?
First, I want to say that I'm so happy with the number of involved fathers I'm seeing nowadays. Out of like 10 sessions I do, 5 or 6 of them, the fathers are there. So this is beautiful. They're being very involved. They are asking questions even more than the mom. You know, they know information and details about their children's lives much more than we ever thought that a man could know of. So I want to say like chapeau bas for these fathers. Good. Because they are doing a great job.
That's refreshing.
Yes. And this gives us hope. Like it took a lot of time and awareness for us to reach here, and we're going to get better at this. Fathers are going to get better at this. And on the other side, there are still so many parents who think that, okay, I was beaten up by my father and I turned up to be fine. He didn't turn up to be fine. Nobody turned up fine, no? We all have our issues. We all have our problems. If I don't want to face them, it doesn't mean they are not there. Okay, so let's make this thing clear. Fathers who are not there have children who don't feel safe. A father's role in a family is just like the dawli role. What's the government's role in a family in a country? The countries that don't have a strong government with rules that are truly applied and they have consequences if we break them, have citizens who don't feel safe, correct?
Very good.
Me, as a Lebanese, as a Lebanese citizen in Lebanon, I don't feel safe because I don't know when any incident might happen. There are no rules. There are rules. There are laws, but not all laws are truly applied. With WASTA, everybody can do whatever they want. Nothing's enforced. But the same person, within 3 hours, 4 hour flight, I go to any country that has laws, I feel very secure and safe. It's just a 4 hour flight away. Exactly happens, the same exact thing happens with a father. Once the father is there, the child feels safe, feels secure, if the father is playing his role correctly of being a father figure. For the parents or for the moms who are listening to this and say that my husband passed, he passed away, or my husband does not want to be involved in his children's life, I tell them, even if this happens, we work on the father's image, father figure, not only the father's presence. Even if the father has a lot of mistakes, I talk with my child, why do you think dad said that? Why do you think, what do you think led him to think that way? From his perspective, he's correct. Let's put ourselves in his shoes. What might be the reason that caused him to say this? Do you think if you have kids, you would have this overprotection, mom, over your children? So because your dad loves you a lot and he's scared that something might happen, how could we convince him that nothing is going to happen? What guarantees can we give him? No, I know in so many families, the mom and the dad have different approaches and different way of thinking in parenting in general. In these cases, when the dad is absolutely uncooperative, I work with the child in a very loving way without humiliating the dad in front of the child, even not in his presence. I don't talk to the child in a very disrespectful way towards his father. Shayf, bayak, no, it's not that approach. Why? Let's put ourselves in his shoes. Let's think from his perspective. How can we convince him otherwise?
Yani Rehan, honestly, haram innu this was 1 hour. Haram.
We're done?
Haram. We're almost done. We have one final thing. But I have to commend you. This was not a conversation I was expecting to have. You and I don't know each other. Yeah. We don't live in the same country. Mm. But what a treat. You were such a gift to this podcast.
Thank you.
There are so many things that you said that I feel like we didn't even do it justice. I wanted to delve deeper. I hope this won't be the last time that you
hopefully come.
Inshallah. My last question, I end this on all my episodes. I ask my guest to ask me a question. Is there something you'd like me to consider, or is there something you'd like to ask me? It doesn't have to be like a question. Mm. But also, you could talk about this because I saw this on her story, okay? And she was giving it to her guests. So I feel so lucky that you got one for me. Can you please explain what this metaphor?
Yeah. So this is a very, we see the snake plant everywhere, you know? Mm-hmm. It's not a rare plant. However, I love this plant because even with the toughest situations that this plant might or circumstances that it might live in, lack of light, lack of water, lack of care, but it still gives oxygen 24/7. Unlike so many other plants, they give oxygen during the day and take oxygen during the night. This is why they tell you can put a snake plant in your bedroom because it doesn't suck up the oxygen in the room. It gives oxygen. And I think so many people are truly like this. With all of the difficult circumstances they live in and with all of the traumas that they live in, whether in their childhood or in their adulthood, they still give the people around them a lot. They give oxygen and life to people around them. So it symbolizes so many people.
I love it. I absolutely love it. No one's ever, they have, but this is a beautiful, beautiful gift. Thank you so much. May we all be snake plants to people in their lives.
It's snake year, by the way.
Is it?
Yeah.
What does that mean?
I don't know.
Okay. It should mean something.
I did this.
Okay, I'll look at that. I'll look at that. Riham, thank you so much for joining us today. If anyone from our audience is interested in reaching out to you, understanding more about what you do, what are the best ways to reach you?
So I have my platform on Instagram. Mm-hmm. It's Riham_Munzir and my website, www.rihammunzir.com. I do online sessions and face-to-face sessions as well. So of course I can help.
Amazing. Thank you again.
Thank you for having me, Dana. It's such a pleasure.
Habibti, the pleasure was all mine. And to our listeners, as always, I want to thank you for the privilege of your time. I hope you found this episode enlightening as I did. I feel like I came away with a lot of golden nuggets that I actually want to think about a little bit more and reflect on and understand how this relates to where I am in my journey today. And I hope, as always, you found something to consider.